Hey friends, welcome to Tough Cookie Talks. Before we get into today's episode, I gotta tell you about Kettlebell Social. It's here. Kettlebell Social is my newly revamped online strength training program and community for women who like to do hard things but are trying to be more chill in their approach to fitness. It's opening for enrollment September 18th, 2023. So depending on when you're listening to this, you can go to the link in the show notes and either get yourself on the interest list or just sign up and join us. Here's the deal. Your workouts are meant to enhance your life, not consume it. You maybe love to work out, but like you have a whole ass life to live outside of the gym. You're so over using exercise to shrink yourself, and you love feeling like a badass, but you also need it to be fun and flexible and free. And you're ready to start questioning the arbitrary rules around fitness and stop following advice that wasn't meant for you. If this sounds like you, we're your people. Come play inside of Kettlebell Social. You can check out the link in the show notes for more info. Welcome to Tough Cookie Talks. I'm your host, Jenna Josephowski, but you can call me Jenna J. I'm a semi-retired professional dancer, dance teacher, and yoga teacher turned certified personal trainer and kettlebell instructor who helps active women learn to lift and get strong with equal parts challenge and compassion. After years of working in the fitness industry, I got sick and tired of watching people, including myself, run themselves into the ground trying to uphold the narrow-minded image of what our culture sees as healthy and fit. But instead of giving it all up, I decided that I'd rather change the game. Call out the BS, extract the good, and help others learn to use movement as a way to build themselves up rather than tear themselves down. On this podcast, we'll explore the intersection of fitness and anti-diet culture and all the gray areas in between. We'll let go of shoulds and judgment and dig into tough conversations with curiosity. Things get pretty spicy around here, so grab your headphones and let's do this. Hey friends, welcome to Tough Cookie Talks. Today I am back with another crossover collab episode with Christina Montalvo, and it has been a minute for us. This episode is super fun and is both lighthearted and deep all at once. We take some time to catch up and talk about what we've both been up to since we've taken a little bit of a break from our collab episodes, what we've been into, what's been bringing us joy, what we've been working through in our personal lives and otherwise. And it's just a really fun episode. So if you want to hang out and shoot the shit with us for a little bit, grab a cup of coffee and let's go chat with Christina.
Okay, here we go. Hi, Jenna.
Yay. Hi, Christina.
We're back.
It's been far too long. How the heck are you? What is up?
I'm doing so good, Jenna, which I'm excited to dive into today because I feel like for a long time I wasn't super good. So I'm excited. I'm doing really good.
Why are you good? I want to hear about all the goodness.
You want to dive in straight into my goodness, I guess?
I kind of do. Yeah. What's good?
I just feel like all the dust has finally settled from my really big life transition in the beginning of 2021. Like, it's like I'm so sick of telling this story, but I feel like I finally turned a corner. End of 2020, closed my gym. Everybody was, I think 2021 was almost worse than 2020 for me.
Yeah. Right?
Like, do you remember how bad I was? Like, is it not over yet?
I'm trying to remember like what the difference is. I feel like it might as well still be 2020.
Exactly. Yes. And like 2022, I was like, okay, it's finally all over. And it wasn't. 2022, I think, is when I finally slowed down long enough to process just how hard 2020 and 2021 were. And now that it's been almost 2 years since the beginning of 2022, I feel like I've crawled out of the ground and I'm like, oh, this is my life again. Like, I feel like 2020 buried me. And I was like, I think I die like this. Like, I think this is it. And so I feel so good. Like, I work so much less than I used to in my 20s, and it feels amazing. Like, I can't believe I used to be a workaholic. I can't believe that work used to take up 95% of my life. And I like thought that I loved it. It's wild. Jenna, it feels like not dieting anymore, but with working.
Okay. Same shit sandwich.
Same fucking shit sandwich. It's a foot long. It's like a fucking foot long.
Oh my God. No, it is. But it's the same shit sandwich. I often think about like
how did we do all of the things we did? And I even think for me, it was twofold. It was when 2020 happened and lockdown happened and we got to go slow down and I then had to re-add things back into my life.
Mm.
I was like, I'm not adding back nearly as many things.
Mm-hmm.
And then still, I think I and a lot of us powered through in a lot of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
I think about like JJ was born in November 2020. 2021, I got back to work and it was less work, but I was like, let's revamp my whole online program. Let's create an online course. Let's move for the fun of it. Let's start a podcast. Like, yeah. I look back, I first of all look around and be like, how did we even get from our old house to our new house and do that move with JJ being so little?
Mm-hmm.
But then how did I also like power through and do all of that stuff? I think about like the online course I created at that time. I was recording like multiple modules every week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
With a tiny baby.
I have no idea, Jenna. Like, I always said this, even when I was closing my gym down, people are like, will you do it again? And I would always say like, oh, I don't know, like maybe. And now I'm like, how did I do that? How did I build a gym in my 20s? Like nobody helped me. Nobody lent me a dime. I did the whole thing. I organized the entire thing. Even its takedown, I did pretty much all by myself. Like, and now I'm like, who was running that program? Like, it doesn't even feel like me anymore that did it. I don't.
Yeah.
I read this quote that said, the more I heal, the less ambitious I am. And that has, I can't stop thinking about that quote. Because okay. I'm like, oh my God, am I not ambitious anymore? It doesn't feel like that. Because I said, it feels good. There's something about whatever I'm doing that I'm like, oh my God, there's a whole point to living again.
Okay. And I want to talk about this. I'm curious, how do you feel about that? Not being as ambitious, like it feels good to you. But I also heard that little part of you that was like, am I not ambitious?
Oh my God. Well, that's like the, I think part of what I was wrestling with in 2022 of like, what does one do when they don't give a shit? And because I was so depressed and so burnt out, it was like a dark, I don't give a shit. It wasn't like, I don't give a shit. It was like, I cannot, I don't have anything to give a shit. I was just dead inside. Mm-hmm. And now it's the opposite. It's like, who gives a shit? Like, we're all going to die. We're all going to die. We're spinning on a fucking circular rock in outer space around a sun. Like, there's just so many other things that I think it's like my values change. It's not, but it's still like dieting where, do you remember how the pursuit of thinness used to feel like a value?
Yeah.
And now you're like, who gives a shit? It's
who gives a shit? Like there are more important things, but also at the same time, like nothing is that important.
Yeah. Yes. And it's literally the same. I think the reason why I'm not panicking like I normally would of like what happened to my ambition, what happened to me doing the most and working the hardest. It's just like, it's the same process I went through with my body where I'm like, oh, the game is rigged. The whole thing was a facade from the start. And so the work piece of the diet culture shit sandwich was much easier for me to make peace with because it wasn't my first rodeo.
Yeah.
And how you and I talk often about how you and I, like the dieting piece was the first domino that needed to fall over. This is what it has afforded me years later, I believe, truly.
Okay. This is interesting. And I feel like I agree with you as in, I think I'm in a similar place, but like a different place because obviously I didn't have that same experience as you with closing my gym. But I think for me right now, it's funny because I've been joking that I've entered my rule breaking era, but then some people come back to me and are like, Jenna, you've always been a rule breaker.
Mm.
But I think right now, like there's a lot more questioning of why. For me, like if I'm about to go and do something because I like to do a lot of things, I'm like, wait, why are we doing this? And is this actually going to serve the purpose that I think it's going to serve?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there's been a lot more of that.
Well, let's catch up with you then. Let's Tell us what's new with you, and then let's see where we end up.
So I'm doing well also, much better than I was the last time we talked. Part of the reason that we took a break was because I simply could not handle my life. Mm-hmm. At the end of the summer, I felt like I had bitten off way more than I could chew. I was ambitiously getting ready to launch my new program, which, you know, maybe we'll touch on that. Maybe we won't. I alluded to it a little bit in some of my solo episodes. I was potty training JJ. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole shit sandwich. And then I was
no pun intended.
Literally. actual pun intended. And then I was getting back into dance teaching like full season, which is very different because I teach dance all year. Mm. But in the summer, it's more recreational. Kids are dancing for fun. Once the school year kicks in, we're getting ready for performance. We're getting ready for competition. Mm-hmm. We're prepping for the season. It's a lot more like go, go, go. And now your music is due. And now your costume is due. And now like everything is just on a tighter time schedule. And it's like, you've got the syllabus and it's like, okay, if I want to get to this place by the end of the year, then we need to teach these skills this month. And like,
mm-hmm. It's like you're just a teacher. You're a literal teacher.
I mean, I'm a literal teacher. Yeah. And that's exactly what it is. And so I found myself like end of August, early September, just having so many meltdowns, just finding myself. There was one day that I cried 3 times in one day, mm-hmm. which people listening might not think that's abnormal. It's interesting. I was talking to a friend of mine that's a therapist, and I was like, am I depressed? like, do I have anxiety? What's going on? I'm like, I've cried like 5 times this week. She's like, well, it depends. Is that normal for you? I'm like, is that normal for people? because it was certainly not normal mm-hmm, mm-hmm. for me to be like that. And it was over dumb shit. It was like, I would be going through the day thinking I was fine. And then all of a sudden I was crying because Eric got a new refrigerator and I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it was that over and over and over again. And I had this moment, and I might've told you about it. I can't remember. You can tell me if I did. Did I talk to you about the cartoon drawings on the post-it note?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. To catch the audience up, I was just having an awful day one day. It was literal shit show at our house due to the potty training stuff. It was the day that I cried 3 times. Eric had gotten me takeout, and he got me like a salad and some cake and stuff. And I was in one of those places where we couldn't even do salad. Like I ate dessert for dinner. And the next day I came home and I was going to eat dinner. And he's like, well, why don't you have the salad I got you last night? And I went to get it and they had put the dressing on it already. So the salad was soggy. Mm-hmm. And I was upset that the salad was soggy. And then Eric was upset with me because he's like, you don't even appreciate, like, I got you food. You didn't even eat it. And it caused a whole fight. And I can't remember what happened. Like I yelled at him. Lost my shit. And I'm like, poor dude is just trying to like get me some food and help me feel better. And, you know, he tried, even though he fell a little bit short with the soggy salad situation. He tried.
I know that I need a break from something when food makes me want to cry. And it happens not often, but like, I get it. The food thing, like a soggy salad when you just want a damn non-soggy salad, truly is heartbreaking. I would have cried too. It's so annoying. It's just like, be the food I need you to be. That's so frustrating.
Oh my God.
When I'm having meltdowns over food, you know, like if Mike eats something that I thought that I was like, oh, this is in the container. And if it's gone once I get home, I'm like, if I have a meltdown, I'm like, I need a fucking break because this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what it was. So anyway, I felt bad for yelling at him. And so I had gone upstairs, taken a shower, came down. He was already asleep. So I wrote him a little I'm sorry note on a post-it. And on the post-it, I drew like a little cartoon coffee and donuts. And it took me back to this time in my life when we would both be gone, when we were hustling for, you know, like 12 to 16 hours a day. And we would both have to pack lunches to leave because we were also like hustling, but too broke to consider like getting anything while we were out. So I would pack lunches for both of us and I would write him little lunch notes and I would cartoonify whatever foods were in the lunch. And I haven't done that in years. And I looked at that note and I was like, what happened to the girl that used to drop cartoon foods on a post-it note? Like smiling little donuts and cups of coffee. Like, where did she go? And I started thinking about that. And I've kind of been on this quest and I'm still on a quest to like find her again and figure out, because I think at that time, that version of Jenna who would draw cartoon foods was also very much like laced in like diet culture, wellness culture, toxic positivity, like, I was like deep in my yoga shit, but like the worst parts of yoga, like white girl Lululemon yoga. And you know, like
that's trying not to even, that's not even just yoga anymore. That's every fucking where white women and Lululemon.
Yeah, it's true. As I sit here, I think my leg.
Oh, that's right. Sometimes I forget Jenna's white. Sorry.
I mean, we are what we are.
Totally.
I understand.
Totally.
In my
so do you have any answers for yourself? Like, where did cartoon Jenna go?
I think there are a couple of things that have played into it. Number one, like the world. I think the thing that I'm trying to sort out though is what parts of that that I want to get back and how do I get it back without like get the positivity without getting the toxic positivity.
So post-its, drawing post-its feels positive to you.
Yes.
Okay.
But like ignoring the events of the world because good vibes only.
Do you still struggle with that? Like with holding like, space for the positive while also acknowledging like the world is fucked.
I'm finding more balance with it. But I think the mind fuck for me is that sometimes I can do almost the opposite where like I've started kind of ruminating over like things in the news cycle that I'm bothered by. And then I'll listen to like 8,000 podcasts about the thing. And I'm like, okay, maybe I just need to like inform myself and then go listen to some music. Like music has been huge for me. I need to listen to more music. And fewer podcasts. And like now everyone's going to turn off our podcast.
No, you want to, I think this has everything to do with what I just said in mind. So it's like, it's consumerism and capitalism and spending and productivity. Like you win nothing, you get nothing and Eric gets nothing worth of value in the world's eyes by you taking time to draw a cartoon post-it note. He can't play the lottery with it. He can't buy anything with it. You're not going to make money off of it. Like there's nothing to gain from doing that. And so I think the first thing that's coming up for me that sounds different, but it's the same, is mincing my own fresh garlic. Okay. My life used to be so busy, especially in my 20s, that cooking, I love to cook and I don't prefer to eat all of my food out of the house. I'm like a grocery shopper and a make my home food at home kind of person. And because I was working so much in my 20s, it had to be quick. Everything. And I've mastered the art of quick, decent meals, carbs, protein, produce, something to make it taste good, whatever. And with all my newfound free time, because I'm not working so much anymore, I have found I love buying a clove of garlic instead of the powder or the premix one. And I remember the first couple of times I was chopping it, I was like, what a fucking waste of my time. Like I could be doing something else. And I'm sitting here peeling the jackets off the garlic. And now I'm like, what a time to be alive that Christina has the time to mince her own garlic. I know it doesn't sound like taking the time to write a post-it note, but like it literally is.
It's your version of it.
Yes. And it doesn't produce anything. I'm not selling something with it. I'm actually taking time to do it. There's no value, monetary value in it. And yet it feels so special. And similar to like, we feel like it's productive to always be plugged into the news cycle. Like I have to learn something. I have to do something.
And or not like, even just the news cycle, but like self-improvement.
Totally. It's a say, totally. Like we are constantly, we're in this machine of like production and better and improvement. And I'm like, I don't, who gives a shit? That's yeah. how I feel. Like, and it's because the world is on fire. Mm. Is why I feel that way. Not in spite of it. But it's
I think that makes sense. Kind of like, did you, I don't know if you saw my Instagram stories yesterday. Did you see my weird Barbie costume?
No, I think you sent me an audio thing. Like we had talked about it.
Okay.
But I didn't see it.
So last night we had dress up night at the dance studio, Halloween dress up, because we don't have class on actual Halloween. And I'm being weird Barbie for Halloween this year. And
I don't even know what that is.
Well, you haven't seen Barbie yet?
Mm-mm, I'm not going to. Mm-mm.
Because everybody wants you to.
I'm really sick of like, I'm sick of like blonde woman feminism. I'm over it.
Okay.
I'm glad that the world was needed that to be introduced to all the problems that women face. And yet I'm like, the white, beautiful, thin blonde women of the world are doing way better than so many of the rest of us. So like, glad y'all got to check that box. I'm glad you loved it. I'm glad it was pink and I'm glad it was fun. And there's a part of me that's like queer women, fat women, black women, brown women, Asian women. I think they're like, we don't fit into that mold.
Okay. Well, I think this is why I resonate with Weird Barbie.
Okay. I don't even, so who is Weird Barbie? Is that a character in the movie?
Yes. So okay. Weird Barbie is Kate McKinnon's character on the movie. And she's essentially the person, she's like the Barbie who's been played with too hard, if you will. So she's like, if you can imagine the Barbie doll who has like a weird haircut and like markers in her hair and like drawn on her face. And like,
that's my Barbie growing
up. Okay. And Weird Barbie like lives on this mountain all by herself. And when stereotypical Barbie like essentially starts malfunctioning and like her feet go flat and they're like, you have to go up on the mountain and see Weird Barbie. And then Weird Barbie like sends her on her journey into the real world.
So wait, hold on. Say it again. So regular Barbie ends up with flat feet.
Yes.
And then has to climb up a mountain to go see Weird Barbie.
And then Weird Barbie sends her on a journey and is like,
sends regular Barbie back on a journey.
Yes. Sends her to the real world, like out of Barbie land.
Okay.
And into the real world where she has to essentially like discover what the world is actually like.
And is that the whole movie? Is that the premise of the movie, that Barbie goes from Barbie world into the regular world?
Yes.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like essentially it's like Barbie thinks that she's doing all these things to empower women. And then actually she goes to the real world and realizes that like everyone's kind of pissed off at her.
Why? Why are they mad at her?
Because she's Barbie and has like put these unrealistic ideals.
Is it Barbie's fault or is it Barbie world's fault?
Both. Okay. I think at least that's my interpretation.
I'm trying real hard not to watch the movie, Jenna. I'm trying real hard not to have to watch.
It was lighthearted and fun. But the reason I resonate so hard with Weird Barbie is because I feel like I can be Barbie passing.
Mm.
If you will. Mm-hmm. Meaning like I am the white woman in Lululemon leggings.
Mm-hmm.
Who can kind of pull that off. And maybe like they joke that like Weird Barbie used to be like one of the most beautiful Barbies of all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that that used to be me. Like toxic positivity, mm-hmm. white girl in Lululemon, a yoga drinking a green juice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I've now been through some shit and realized what it is. And then people think they're like coming to see a Barbie to get some help. And I'm like, well, yeah, go over there. Look at this shit.
So I know that you, and I think it's so interesting because you and I didn't know each other when you were, I'm going to call it 2016, because we didn't meet until after.
Right.
We met in what, 2019? So there's nothing, I don't see you in that way. I've never experienced you as Barbie passing in a stereotypical way. So it's interesting for me to hear about it because I'm like, I don't know that part of Jenna. I've obviously heard about the stories of who you were, blah, 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 yeah. So it's interesting for me to hear that because I've never engaged with those parts of you.
Yeah. Parts of me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think if you look at who I am on the surface, like personality wise, like I tend to be very glass half full now. Mm-hmm. But like take that to just a super extreme place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where now, even though my natural tendency is to like take your problems and find a silver lining and make lemonade out of them,
mm-hmm.
I'm now also able to pause and be like, oh, maybe that's not what everyone wants.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe we're just allowed to be sad.
Yes.
And 100%. One thing that I feel like has helped me tap back into that, because as you know, as an Enneagram 7, I love to busy myself
mm-hmm.
so that I don't have to think about the things that are making me sad. Sad is especially hard for me. Anger is easier because anger feels productive.
Mm-hmm.
I can be angry because anger fuels me to do more things that keep me busy. So mm-hmm. I don't have to think about the fact that I'm actually sad.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, but that's where I feel like music has been extremely helpful lately, because sometimes I have a hard time, like in my own head, articulating how I feel,
mm-hmm.
Or even like wanting to explore that, but I can listen to somebody else sing their sad song or something that's like really like dark and poetic and be like, oh fuck, that's how we've all been feeling.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And I can like feel it vicariously through that person and potentially make up a dance about it.
I'm going to tell you a weird story about me and music. I've always been very musically inclined. I started to teach myself how to play it was a keyboard. I got an electric keyboard when I was like 4 or 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time Titanic came out, I taught myself how to play that entire Celine Dion song on the keyboard just by listening to it. And it took me weeks. I would listen to the note and I would find it. I was a gifted child. Now,
wow.
I'm just fucking weird. Music has always, I think they call it, it's one of the intelligences. And yeah. As a dancer, we get this. I can feel music in my body. I understand music. I memorize music. I will listen to a song until I've memorized all the lyrics, but then also all the actual music. Like I can just like memorize it.
Yeah.
I think I do something maybe a little bit different than you. I understand how I'm feeling first, and then I go and find a song that meets that.
Mm.
So I do what you do, but in the opposite.
Interesting.
And I love it. Cause then I'm like, I know that I can turn on this song by this artist and it either tells the story or it has like the melody that I feel like I'm feeling. Isn't that so weird?
I love it. I love how people's brains connect with that. Similarly, so I never played like an instrument when I was in school, I did choir and whatever. Mm-hmm. I was like a mediocre singer, but I'm a tap dancer, which is very musical. And sometimes I feel like I hear things in music that other people just don't hear. And it becomes abundantly clear when I'm teaching and I'm trying to like break down a rhythm and it's not quite translating in the way that I think it is. But the way that I choreograph, especially when it's tap, is I know what the rhythm sounds like before I ever get into the studio and even put on shoes. Mm-hmm. Like I'll drive in my car and I'll hear it and I know what the steps sound like. And then I put my shoes on and I make up steps that sound like that rhythm.
So you feel it first.
Yeah.
You feel it. Yeah. Okay. Same. Minus the dancing.
Yeah.
Oh, I love music though. I love music.
And what are you listening to right now?
I am on a very interesting intersectional kick between Post Malone and Noah Kahan. They have that one song, Dial Drunk or Drunk
yes,
Dial,
yes, yes.
That they do together. And so I love Post Malone and I always have, which is so funny because his genre isn't like my go-to favorite genre, but I'm obsessed with all things Post Malone.
Okay.
I love Noah Kahan because his music makes me feel things. And he's just like a poet wordsmith with the feelings and the stories. His music move. Noah Kahan's music moves me on the inside.
Okay, same. And you and like 8 other people introduced me to him because I was on a Florence and the Machine kick.
Oh, for love Florence.
Florence. I was, we could talk about some of those lyrics.
Oh,
in a moment.
Just thinking about her.
I have a story about being at one of her concerts, but I was listening to her while I was painting my deck. And like, I was listening to like her most recent album, Dance Fever, like just the whole thing all the way through, painting my deck, feeling all the feels. And I posted to my Instagram stories, like, what are you all listening to? And 80 people were like Noah Kahan. So now I am also obsessed and like all the feels.
So good. Which brings me back to what you were saying about feeling sad. This is something that I've been working on. Well, I've had to work on it first within my own self. And now it's something that with, especially with my fitness clients, and you and I think did a joint episode on this also, or maybe not, I don't remember, but maybe it was just a conversation about how in fitness, we tend to put things in a hierarchy, right? Yeah. This is doing better than this, and this is better than this, and this is better than this. And with emotions, I was a little bit different than you in my 20s. I wasn't toxic positivity. I was more like, feelings are stupid. Just do what the fuck needs to be done. And you can feel your little feelings later, motherfucker. Let's go. Like 10 years of that. And it worked. It worked when you looked at the spreadsheets and you looked at the numbers, like it worked. And yeah. No one ever taught me that like part of being a human is to also consider how you're feeling about the whole thing. And so similar to you, like anger was my go-to. I still love my anger. I'm a big fan of my anger in a world that tells women to be like quiet and happy. I'm like, I will rip your face off and laugh about it. but I always felt that sadness was like the worst emotion.
Yeah.
Because it slows you down. What are you going to do when you're sad? Like you're saying, anger, I could change the world when I'm angry. I've tried. And way more momentum that way. And sadness makes me want to do nothing. And I had to realize, and I'm still messing with this, but like feeling sad isn't worse than feeling happy because happy is just like a mood. Mm-hmm. It's not who I am.
Right.
Like I can feel happy or I can feel sad. I don't have to be sad.
Oh, yeah.
And sadness used to be so scary to me that I felt like once I let myself feel sad, that I would just become sadness.
It's just not, for me, sadness is just not pleasant.
Right.
And I definitely think there is that fear of like not ever coming out of it. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I think I've realized more recently is that if I just allow myself to embrace it and feel like all the sad and just let myself cry, then the feeling passes quicker. Like if I just let the storm come out instead of trying to run from it, it all comes out and then it's done. And then we don't have to like, you know, I don't know, just like stew in it, trying to fight it. You know what I mean? It's the difference between like getting through a thunderstorm versus like impending clouds and you know it's coming.
Yeah. For me, like weird things happen. Well, I think I felt all the effects of it. Like we started the episode in 2020. I had all this time to pause and sit still. And I was like, oh my God, like how many, I was working away sadness and grief and things that bothered me. Cause it's like, who has the time to sit and feel these things?
Right.
And so, yes, like the more I just let myself feel stuff, I have more momentum that way. Like, let me just like cry it out and then move on with my day instead of like, why do I feel sad? This can't be right. And then I tried to like talk myself out of feeling sad, which actually wastes a lot of energy in my life. And now I'm just like, oh, I'm sad today.
Yeah.
Maybe tomorrow I won't be.
It's interesting because, you know, for me, it was a little bit different. It was more like, and still to this day, sometimes I won't even realize that I'm sad. It's not like I'm trying to fight the sad. It's like I'm too busy to feel sad until I finally hold it in for so long that I can't take it anymore. And then one dumb thing happens.
Like your salad.
That just causes, that causes the floodgates to open. And it's like, oh, it's not about the salad. It's actually about this thing that happened a month ago.
Yes, totally. Yep. Yeah.
So
but being sad is super uncomfortable. I also think too, like something else that's been on my mind recently is just how much our, like our society and our world doesn't honor emotions ever. It's always
no.
like, even like, and this is different because I know that you're a parent and I'm not. So my observation of the world of children is, as a parent, I'm like, y'all have fun with that mess. I'm going to stand on these sidelines and watch. But
yeah.
like I watch parents get, they get frustrated with their children when they're sad. And every time I see that, I'm like, ooh, you can't sit with yourself when you're sad. Like, I know where that's coming from, but we were taught that we can't be sad, be happy, go out and play. For me as a kid, it was, don't be angry. That was like the, don't be so angry, which just pissed me off. So
yeah,
I was denied my anger. We end up denying ourselves sadness. And so then we all turn into adults, raising a world of children beneath us that also cannot feel their emotions. And then it's hard to build a meaningful life that way. Like I want to be able to call my friends and say, I'm sad. That's how
yeah.
you get support. And our world just isn't set up. Our world is set up the more of the way that I set up myself when I was in my 20s. Like, don't worry about how you're feeling. Just do the damn thing. And I don't think that works forever for everyone.
No. And in light of the parenting thing, I'm thinking about this because I do think there are a lot of people like in our generation that are now parents that are starting to, I don't want to say allow, but like normalize all feelings.
Yeah. Allow, I think too.
For children. And I think in doing that with JJ, it's helped to realize some stuff about myself and some of the stuff, very much how you were parented, how I was parented, was like, stop being dramatic. For me, it was always like, my reactions were too big. Don't make a scene in public. You're embarrassing me. Like all of that, essentially. And the way that I am with JJ now, and I like try to explain this, you know, when, whether it's with Eric, who is like starting to get it, or like, you know, any other family member that's over, and it's like, no, he is allowed to cry. He's still not going to watch another episode of Bluey.
Yes.
But he's allowed to be sad about it.
Yep,
like we can
totally.
Still hold the boundary and be like, TV's going off now.
Yep. Yep.
And you're allowed to not like it.
Can I? Yes. This is what I mean. I'm going to use that same exact example for our listeners who maybe don't have kids like myself, who are like, how is this going to help me? I'm going to use a marriage example.
Okay.
It's, and this is not totally true, but I'm going to have to make it that way so the story makes sense.
Okay.
If Mike's job in our house is to take out the garbage, okay, and if he forgot, and if he's upset that I didn't take it out, even though he forgot it, he's allowed to be upset, but that doesn't mean that I have to take out the garbage for him. So you're exactly right. Like the same thing happens, whether it's with our children or our partners or even our friends, like he's allowed to be upset that the garbage wasn't taken out and I don't have to do anything to fix it for him. He can be upset about his mistake and I don't have to do anything different. JJ gets to be upset that you're shutting off Bluey. It doesn't mean that you have to keep Bluey on to keep him from crying.
Right.
And I think people we're so uncomfortable with emotions. What does it mean if my child is crying? He's just sad that Bluey's being turned off. It doesn't mean you're a bad mom. And I think people think that that's what that means.
Right. And it's been challenging to reckon with, but like, I'm glad we're doing it because I think that's part of the reason that a lot of us then grew up to like hustle and shove everything down in the way we do. I even think about like from a dance teacher perspective. And I think for a long time also why I felt so uncomfortable with things like sadness and stuff like that is because in the dance studio, like, and on stage, like, the show must go on. Like, don't have a bad attitude in class. Like, you also can't be tired. Don't yawn because that's rude. And, you know, if you're upset about your casting and you didn't get the part that you wanted, too bad. Like, don't make a scene. Save it for your pillow 5, 6, 7, 8. Here we go. Put on a smile. And also, I don't care if you're injured. Right. Because your whole team's counting on you.
Holy shit. Yes. It's embedded in the fabric of society that we are robots and not humans who feel shit.
Yeah.
So I'll give you an example. In my 20s, so 10 years from 20 to 30, I cried maybe 10 times. I counted. And I went into my first therapy appointment as an adult, 25, 26, and said, I haven't cried in years. She saw me coming from a mile away because I thought she was going to be like, wow, you're so mature. Like in my mid 20s, I felt that crying a lot meant you were immature, much like a child.
Mm-hmm.
So I was demonstrating in my first therapy appointment of how great I was. And she's like, scribbling it down. And it would take another 4 or 5 years for me to be like, oh, crying is actually fine. And like one of the things that helped me learn to be okay with crying is knowing that your body is actually expelling hormones that are like stress hormones.
Yeah.
And so I needed the permission of the productivity of my body expelling something from it for me to be like, oh, maybe there's use in crying. But the point of all this being that like, I too was like a non-emotional dead inside person. And I really thought that that was the way that you like make your way through life.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it is. I feel better now that I get this whole range of emotions, that also like, for example, like a whole range of emotions opens up a whole range of different music genres that I can listen to. And it's just like being a human. I don't know. We're supposed to feel shit. That's what makes us not a robot.
Right. Right. So you know? Yeah,
man, it's wild.
It is really wild. And so like to the point of all of this and like my journey to rediscover like happier, less cynical Jenna, I think that there is something in listening to music.
Mm-hmm.
I need to do that more. I need to dance more and not just like teaching my classes. I feel like I need to dance more for myself. I think that there's like an outlet in that in itself that's really powerful. Just creating things in general. I miss writing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like when I used to blog a lot more, that was really cathartic with me. And I haven't done that as much in the past because like in the past couple of years, because time and, you know, maybe how fast paced the internet seems to be in terms of content creation and having a podcast now and stuff. But for the past couple of weeks, I've been doing some writing, just sending like emails to my list.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been really enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
To just kind of like process some of the different things that I've been thinking about and write about it.
Because I think what you're saying is the same, it's expression. And yeah. That's what emotion is, right? So like when you're dancing, and I'm not a dancer, but movement, I feel like I could have been a dancer. Do you know what I mean? Not
you should have been
skillful, but like I am music makes you get it. I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah.
You're expressing your body. And I have that with movement, whether that's walking or lifting, different types of lifting. Like sometimes you ever feel like the connection between like something that you're doing in the gym that reminds you of dancing, just either in the fluidity or so like that is a way that I express myself. That's what you're saying, right? Like even the way that what you were writing on your post-it note to Eric was an expression.
Yeah.
You were expressing yourself in a non-clinical way, in a way that like, I think the business world and again, productivity and capitalism is like, it's like taking a college writing class where they're like, it has to be APA format. And I'm like, fuck you. Does the paragraph make sense or not? Like, there's all these rules for the ways that we can express ourselves as adults, but writing and dancing and music and painting your deck are all ways to express yourself that I think aren't products of capitalism.
And they're undervalued. And I think it is reflected in the like lack of pay for artists.
Totally. 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 100%. Because art will always be less valued because it's ambiguous. It's like, I can say like this right here. I can look at it and say, I love it. You can say that you don't love it. And so, that's a threat to capitalism because you won't buy it if you don't love it.
Yeah.
So and I agree. Art is totally the opposite. I agree.
there's no objective measure for like what makes something good and not good. And I think that's what makes sometimes like dance competitions really challenging.
Totally.
Because it is so subjective to like who's sitting at that judge's table at the moment, because it's not something like figure skating, for example, where it's like, okay, you need to have like, you know, this skill is worth this many points and this skill is worth that many points. And like, yes, there's like technique and skill to certain, like we'll call them tricks in dancing, but like you can't put a rubric on like movement quality and like artistic expression, which is so unique.
Something else in, so I love writing. Writing has always been a really, like, similar to the piano days. Like, I started writing probably when I was about like 8 or 9, just like in journals. And I always wrote in like a kind of poetry way, not on purpose, but because I feel like full sentences are sometimes just too much. Mm-hmm. And something that I've done, with my email list is I've like stopped capitalizing stuff. I've stopped punctuation. Cause I'm like, who gives a fuck? Like, this is what I have to say. And I want to say it and to be like, where's the comma and blah, blah, blah. And similar to what I do with my podcast in season 2, I stopped editing it. I'm like, and I'm not saying that this is considered art, but in a way it kind of is. Cause it's like, I say what goes in this little world of mine. And I don't feel like capitalizing my eyes here or making it perfect, just like art. Like you can just, I don't know. It doesn't have to be,
you know what?
I don't know.
I feel like there's a connection in here with your nature kick 100%. That you've been on. I was thinking about this when I was out in my yard and I was pulling weeds. And I was just looking about my yard and like doing yard work is such a weird thing, because when you think about pulling weeds, right, you're trying to make the yard look like neater and nicer. You know what I mean? But you could sit there and you could like pull weeds and like weird little plants and like wrong shaped blades of grass all day. And it's never going to be perfect because like nature's not perfect.
Yes. Yes. Do you buy the weird looking produce box?
Yeah.
It's the same. It's the same.
Tastes the same.
People are like, oh, the carrot looks funny. I won't buy it. And it's like, that is literally one way to describe that's a different same shit sandwich of like, you're going to chop it and cook it and eat it and shit it out. It's going to be the same as the one that looks perfect. Mm-hmm. But we had to create a company that sells odd looking produce because people only want to go to the store and buy the shit that all looks perfect and the same. Mm-hmm. But in nature, things do not grow that way.
No.
Like,
no.
It's all connected. You're exactly right.
It's all connected.
It's wild.
Shit.
It is wild.
But that's why I think we all just kind of have to relax around things, and coming back to my like weird Barbie thing.
Yeah.
Just have some fucking fun. Mm-hmm. Wear a stupid costume, draw like a black eyeliner circle around your entire eyeball just because it brings people joy. Like, and it brings you joy. I had so much fun. I got this stupid dress that's like flouncy. It's like, because it's got like poofy
flouncy in so long,
because nobody wears flouncy dresses anymore. That's but it's got true. Like tulle underneath it, and I had so much fun with my weird like drawn on face and my like flouncy dress that I'm like holding up like trying to show my legs so like people can see my feet when I tap dance, but I'm like holding my... it was fun. Yeah. It was so much fun.
Yeah, that's so good.
I feel like we need to be less serious and less perfect.
See, I consider myself to be a very serious person. I will always be serious. I just can't help it. It takes me a lot to be like goofy and not serious. I was just born a serious person.
Okay.
What was the other word that you said? Less perfect. Never tried to be perfect. That's, I think, always been my secret sauce. I've never tried to be perfect. I don't give a shit.
Okay. This is so interesting.
Why?
Do you like, I'm the complete opposite. I've always been very silly, like not serious at all. I've always been a giant goofball and yet have always tried to be perfect.
I'm only going to say this too, because I know that you'll get it. There's something about perfectionism that is very white girl to me.
Oh, 100%.
I think that is, so I was the only, not, I know that I am white, I am white passing. I was the only minority kid. My sister and I were the only minority kids in our entire school.
Yeah.
So I automatically had like, I'm different than you from the start. I think that's a big reason why I'm like, I don't want to fit in. I've never fit in. I don't want to fit in with any of you people. Pros and cons to that. So I think I've rejected perfectionism because I saw how many of all the perfect little girls, little white girls in school try to be perfect. And I was like, y'all are so annoying.
Okay. And do you want to know something? Kind of back to Weird Barbie and kind of on a tangent.
Yeah.
I feel like when I try very hard, I can play that part and be perfect little white girl. But I feel like there were aspects of me, and part of me also wonders if it's not like the, like the ADHD, like not being neurotypical, where I didn't quite fit, or like I tried to be perfect and fell short and everyone was like, ew, you're weird.
For trying, right?
Yeah. And I think there are aspects of that, that like, while I could pull it off and fake it sometimes, I think in my heart, there's always just been this part of me that wants to say fuck it and embrace the imperfection.
Yeah. Yes. I totally know what you mean about like, you can try it, but it's like exhausting. It doesn't feel good. The trying so hard to be perfect is exhausting. I don't think it's exhausting for everybody. I think it feels good for some people, but like, yeah, I could probably try. I think I have tried in certain scenarios when I maybe wanted to fit in more. And that doesn't feel good. I can't do it.
Well, it's like masking.
Yes.
Yes. And I think there are situations, when I can play that part.
Mm-hmm.
But it is exhausting. And to your point, it doesn't feel good. And that's why we're all fucking tired. And back to the idea of perfectionism, I forget what the book is exactly, but like, perfectionism is very much like essentially like one of the qualities of white supremacy.
Yes.
Do you remember what book I'm talking about? It's not a very long book.
God. We read it in the Barbell Collective. Is it You, Me, and White Supremacy or no?
No.
It is a short book, isn't it? It's like 156 pages.
Hold on. I feel like I am going to go book club. Hold on. I'm trying to, somewhere it's on, where is this Trello board? I'm going to have to look for it, because I feel like when I did a Coach's Corner with Damali, she had a book list and she recommended this book. And I cannot for the life of me remember what it was. But yeah, it was essentially like, these are all of like the qualities of white supremacy culture. And perfectionism was one of them. Another one that I remember is urgency. Like that, get it done quick, get it done now.
Yep. I have lots of thoughts on urgency also. But maybe we can save that for another episode. I Googled it and I don't see the book that's coming up. I don't see it. Maybe we can link it in the show notes if somebody is interested.
Yeah, it'll come to me. I'm trying to. Yeah, I cannot find where it is. It is somewhere.
Okay. Yeah, no. Yes, that's a, once I learned that, that was like a moment of reckoning for me, because I was like, oh, why? And it took me a long time to understand how perfectionism, I like understood when I read it and I was like, okay, I believe this. And then it took me a couple more months, if not years, to remember like, why was grade school so uncomfortable for me? Why was part of high school so uncomfortable for me? And it was always this comparison of the girls that could do the like goody two shoes. Oh, I got an A minus. Why did I get an A minus? I'm like, fuck you. It's an A.
Yeah.
This is your biggest worry that you have. There's a ton of privilege in being a kid whose biggest worry is keeping their grades good. And this is without, you know, maybe their parents are abusive. If they don't get straight A's, I think that's a completely different story, but also rooted in white supremacy. Like if your parents are beating your ass because you're not getting straight A's, like that's some colonial shit, I think.
Right.
But yeah, it was helpful for me to read that and to understand that, because I was like, oh, I'm not doing something wrong if I'm not striving for perfection. I'm actually doing it right by not striving for perfection. Yeah.
What did your parents think of that growing up?
So I was the kind of kid who I would come home type eight and I'd say, so I'm going to get straight A's in all these classes, but I don't like my chemistry teacher, so I'm going to get a C. And they were okay. Like, okay, cool. And then I'd say, and I have like, my parents never really had to parent me. I you won't be surprised here. I did what I wanted, when I wanted, how I wanted, and then over communicated it so that everyone knew what I was doing so that nobody would be concerned.
Oh, huh.
Yeah. So whatever that's called.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was a very difficult child to be a parent of, for sure.
I think my parents, I got good grades. My parent, and there were classes that I didn't get particularly good grades in, like math and science were hard for me. Mm-hmm. My mom was a teacher growing up, but it was also very much like, well, did you try your best?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then that's mm-hmm. fine.
Totally.
Like trying was important. Like effort was important.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the outcome wasn't necessarily as big of a deal.
I was a very good test taker. I was very good at school. And so there were plenty of times where I didn't try and I still got good grades.
Yeah, same.
And then there were classes where I was like, actually, this teacher's a dick, so I'm not going to try. And I didn't. Mm. And I would still just get a C, and I like would tell my parents, like, I'm not going to try. Sorry. Yeah. Go ahead and ground me. I don't care. Mm. But they never did. I was too busy working. They couldn't ground. It was funny. I don't know. Me as a kid is funny, I think. So anyway.
Very funny.
Are we all caught up, Jenna? Did we finish our catch up?
I feel like
episode?
We are. That was a good catch up. I feel like we're caught up on enough things for now. Yeah.
All right. Well, until next time then. I'm glad to be back. I'm excited for whatever else comes up between our crossover episodes this time around.
Yay.
It'll be good.
All right.
Until next time, crew.
I hope you enjoyed hanging out and catching up as much as I did. Christina and I will be back in a couple of weeks talking about some of the new year, new me bullshit that tends to come up this time of year and what we're trying to do differently. So have a great day, have a great week, and we'll talk soon. Thanks again for tuning into Tough Cookie Talks. I'm so glad you're here. If you want to learn more about me and how we can work together, visit my website, itsjennaj.com, or follow and tag me on Instagram at itsjennaj. I would love to hear from you. If you liked this episode and want to hear more, make sure you click subscribe and follow along so that you don't miss a single show. Then take a moment and leave me a 5-star rating and review so that we can help this podcast and this message reach even more people. Have a great week, and we'll talk soon.